More Americans may not get overtime pay as expected in about a week. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. A judge in Texas has blocked, for now, new Obama administration rules that would have made a lot more employees eligible for overtime pay. The rules were supposed to go into effect a week from tomorrow, December 1st. It's a victory for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and a setback for a signature Obama initiative to help middle-class workers. From our bureau at Oregon Public Broadcasting, Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
At issue are new regulations that would double the salary threshold under which white-collar workers are entitled to overtime pay that would make more than 4 million workers immediately eligible for time and a half. Obama administration lawyers have said they're considering their options, but Ross Eisenbray at the Progressive Economic Policy Institute says the legal proceedings may now run out the clock.
The question is, how soon can it be reversed? Will the Trump administration end up defending the rule? If this case is still pending when President Trump takes office in January.
Given Republicans and business groups' bitter opposition, that appears unlikely. Meanwhile, many employers have already told employees they'll be getting raises or overtime pay. Kerry Lear, a human resources consultant in Portland, is advising employers to consider
the morale of their employees. Have they communicated these changes, and are their employees really expecting that and looking forward to that? Will that be a hit to morale if these changes aren't made?
Some major employers, like Walmart, have already raised salaries of managers to comply with the new overtime rules. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let's do the live numbers. The Dow, S&P, and the NASDAQ closed at new record highs again yesterday, with the Dow above 19,000 for the first time, the S&P 500 above 2,200 for the first time. Investors have been rotating into stocks and out of bonds with predictions of higher interest rates in a Trump administration. This morning, stock index futures are down slightly. Now to an emerging term, rage donations. Across the country, progressive nonprofits are reporting a dramatic surge in donations as disappointed Clinton voters channel their frustration into hard cash. Marketplace's Adam Allington has more.
Earl Carlson is the Brooklyn-based designer of RageDonate.com. He said the idea bubbled up organically as he and his friends vented their frustrations following the election of Donald Trump.
And we got to this point where we're like, okay, you know, we can kind of complain a lot about this, or we can actually do something about it.
On the site, users scroll through Trump quotes about Mexicans, Muslims, women. Below each quote, a Rage Donate button allows people to send $10 to an opposition nonprofit. Activism in the age of Amazon.
We make it really easy for people to link directly from, I disagree with this sentiment. How can I help?
One of the beneficiaries of those donations is the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a nonprofit that focuses on digital rights. Cindy Cohen is the foundation's director.
We're seeing about four times as much financial support post-election as in the days before it.
And they're not the only ones seeing a Trump bump. The ACLU has raised over $13 million since the election, an all-time record in the group's 96-year history. I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Codebreaker is back with a brand new season. This time around, a new question. Can it save us? We are asking this simple question about a different kind of technology every single week. You can subscribe now on iTunes.
The virtual reality Christmas. Sit in the basement with the VR headset clamped on your head, looking at a digital fake tree and faux holiday conviviality. Well, tech manufacturers hope to sell a lot of VR gear for the holidays, with cheaper units on the market now from PlayStation, Google, Daydream, and more. But as virtual reality becomes more ubiquitous, so do questions about how it will change us. My colleague, Marketplace tech host Ben Johnson, just launched the second season of his podcast called Codebreaker, where he's exploring the intersection of technology, culture, and life. This season, Ben is asking a big question, whether technology can save us. Hello, my friend.
Hi, David.
On Codebreaker, your podcast, you've been looking at some different applications of VR beyond having some fun. And what, they're using this, for instance, in a courtroom?
There's a lot of experimentation happening in different industries, and that includes the legal industry, David. In a way, this makes a lot of sense. Lawyers are always trying to win over a jury with the most convincing tools possible. You've got oration, expert witnesses, audio evidence, photos. But now, to create a truly immersive reconstruction of a crime scene, lawyers are starting to turn to virtual reality.
I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, in courtrooms, you've seen multimedia. It's typically poster board with little diagrams.
Sure.
But I guess this is the higher tech version, and they've tried it already?
This example that I'm about to give you here comes back from 1992. So there was this case, Stevenson versus Honda. It was about a motorcycle accident. And Honda actually recreated the accident with a kind of proto virtual reality headset that turned photos of the accident scene into video that moved at the speed of the person driving in the accident from the driver's perspective. It was this kind of risky legal move by Honda, but all the jury members tried this headset on and saw the recreation of the accident, and the jury ended up siding with Honda.
Now, the fundamental question of your podcast asks, I mean, I love the question you're looking at. Can it save us? Can it save us money, legal fees, whatever? What do you think in this case?
For one thing, virtual reality content is really expensive to make, so it's probably not going to be in the public defender's legal toolbox anytime soon. But there's also this issue of perspective. We talked to Damien Schofield. He's a professor of computer and human interaction at the State University of New York.
Imagine recreating a murder scene. I could show you that murder scene from the perspective of the victim, or I could show you that murder scene from the perspective of the killer. And whichever way you see it is going to give you a completely different perspective of that crime.
So in court, where there's always a disagreement about the truth of what happened and people's livelihoods are on the line, virtual reality could serve the guilty as well as the innocent.
Ben Johnson, host of our podcast, Codebreaker. You can hear a full episode about virtual reality by searching for Codebreaker wherever you get your podcasts for free, iTunes, marketplace.org, wherever. Ben, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Our producers are Justin Ho, Katie Long, Daniel Shin. Our engineer this week is Ben Tolliday. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.